I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.
Nah, but like, for example, like, you know what? It's getting a bit too crazy. I don't think I have a type. You know, I think I think I may lean towards a certain way subconsciously, right?
Because he's your type.
But I'm super open.
Okay. So you're basically a whore. You have a type or a whore? You're a whore or have a type?
I haven't had jiggy jiggy in like...
You don't have to have jiggy jiggy to be a whore.
It's true. But I don't even talk to... Bro, I work too much, man. That's my issue. Maybe if I wasn't doing that, maybe it'd be...
Is that what you tell your babes? That you work too much, that's why you can't spend time with them?
Facts.
Interesting.
You save bare money as well.
Chasing the bag first.
I can't really go out, but you can come to the office.
Have you
ever used the office to do anything jiggy jiggy related?
Never
in your life.
Never.
Oh, fair enough.
Never. Interesting. Never. Bro, that's where my staff go. I love my staff. Shout out to you lot. Toby's not here, dickhead. But other than that, yeah, I love everyone.
Man said cube after hours, I hear it, man.
Fair enough.
Guys, are you gonna be a whore this summer?
I might be, man.
Fair enough.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I might be. I'm in the mood. Pressure's I can't lie. I'm in the mood.
Bro.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know what he said.
For the audio listeners, first lot of guys nodded.
Okay. He agreed. I hear it. This is a different start to the Post Credit Scene Podcast, a 14HQ original, lovers of film and TV. We are joined by the one and only Bisolasis. A round of applause for her.
She's not on the podcast. She's in the background, just so you know.
We've got Redhead Bisola.
Yeah.
Styly.
I think that's the first time we've got Redhead Bisola, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah, you've been blonde for a minute, no?
Guys.
Stop it.
I'm joined also by Hussam.
Yes, guys. Sorry, I'm just taking a stat for the story. You get me? The whole gang. All right, cool. Yeah, man. Hey, guys. I've been craving this pod for a long time.
I said craving, you know.
Craving.
It feels like we haven't podded in a while.
It feels longer than that.
Like
6 weeks, bro.
Yeah, it feels longer than that.
But it's because we were on a freaking roll, man. Like,
what's happening, girl? You all right?
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm fucking pumped.
Yeah, I know. We are. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Good.
Manny, how are you?
I'm all good, my brother. Just here, living. Yeah? I got a bit of a cold, though, but I'll be fine. Yeah, man, I'll be fine though.
Ginger shot and all that.
Yeah, I had a few. Yeah. I had a ginger. Wasn't it ginger? That's a lie. It was pull up the bottle. It was charity green. I don't know what it is, but it's doing the job.
Okay, I hear you.
I hear it.
I hear you.
That sounds nice.
Good. Jason, how are you?
Nah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Good to be back.
Yes, sir.
As always.
Uh huh. Feeling good.
Feeling good.
Healthy.
Feeling great. Healthy.
MK looking after you well.
Always.
Our favorite part timer. How are you guys?
Yesterday I was out. I had a good time.
Yeah. Where'd you go?
Chilled in the park with some friends, man.
It's that time of year.
It's time of year.
Something easy.
I can't say on the pod now, but there's a reason why I'm laughing.
Okay.
Why?
Because of you, but
because of the girl.
But if you want to do that, you can do that.
I mean, she's definitely not listening to this pod. So
I'm telling her right now, yo, man, I'm in love with you, doggy. like there's a girl, guys, yeah, that guys went to the picnic with his friends and that, yeah. She doesn't know yet, but
she will know after this.
But we're basically married.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hear it.
Yeah.
Good looking girl, man.
Yeah.
Good soul as well.
Great vibes.
Yeah, good soul.
Good soul, great vibes. That's my doggy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Lives life.
Yeah.
Definitely lives life.
Yeah. I've been like playing it cool, innit?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. We're going to dive in today to talk about some of the film and TV releases through the last few weeks. It's been a good period, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's been a good period. For film and TV, to be fair, actually.
Mm-hmm. I like this year, this proportion in the year for film. It's always like these like really experimental films. Okay. Fuck you.
What's going on with the...
What's so funny?
What you said. It's been a great time.
I was saying this period usually like February to like it's like May is where it's not like the blockbuster films, but it's like really good solid films that get released with like no pressure of having crazy sales or whatever it is. That's what I was trying to say.
I saw someone mention, I think it was on the outtake, shout out them man, that this might be the best year for films post COVID.
It depends on how you're looking at it though, because the films we got at the start of this year came out in America last year.
I would say
some of those no.
Let's do the UK thing.
But if we're scaling not in the UK, then you could argue so, because we had like at the start of the year we had holdovers and all that stuff.
Holdovers.
Mean Girls 2. Yeah. Is it 2? 2024 musical.
Yeah.
For Bisola. I'd say it's been a good start. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to dive into some of those releases today.
I think, off topic, we need a day where we pick a random year and we argue whether that's the best year.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Or we pick a year each.
Pick a year each and then come into battle. Pick like 5 films from that year.
Interestment. Okay, we'll start off with one of the films that came out this week.
Okay.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Hossam, this is your bag. This is your franchise. This is your world, your universe.
It is.
Intrigued to know. Yeah, monkeys is your universe.
Just a bunch of us, guys.
I'm intrigued to know why this franchise means so much to you and your anticipation for this particular film based upon the prequels and so on and so forth.
I'm going to use a guy's word here. It's just so fantastical, man. You know, okay? Like, it's dramatic, okay?
Isn't that just the universal word?
Guys made up the word.
No, I've only ever heard guess it.
We're suddenly found on a guest dictionary.
Yo. After what he said earlier.
I don't know what they're talking about. George Bush hates white people. All right, cool. So, no. It's a fantastic franchise, okay?
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy it. They concentrate on the storyline as much as they want us to see, like, the actually really weird kind of, like, how do apes, you know, smart apes, you know, win this. The whole like franchise is almost about evolution backwards, you know, and it's freaking sick. And obviously they have like the old films to base it off, the old books to base it off. So we almost know where the franchise is going, but that doesn't. But they put in what I was saying to Gaz and Manny the other day is that they put in 2-3 films in there that weren't in the original set of films, but it's because they're filling in like gaps between like the skips in generations.
Yeah,
and I think that's freaking sick, brother. Do you know what I mean? So not all the films have been 10-10. I don't think any of them have been a 10-10.
It's a solid franchise.
It's a solid franchise. Like, it's an enjoyable franchise. Okay, and if you're like part of a family, or if you're like, you know, with your boys, whatever, I think it's perfect. I think it's
very
so
underrated.
Perfect.
Now you think
super like,
it's
underrated.
Under the tier of like your Star Wars, as Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. Like maybe like
that tier under it.
Maybe like a tier or two like.
Yeah.
Under it, like kind of where like you would put like a Fast and Furious franchise.
Oh no, please, let's be a bit more respectful. Put Fast and Furious
no, but
way below
Fast
that.
And Furious, if it had 5 films instead of 10, you would say it's solid franchise. Okay. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if it ended in Brazil with the whole then you would have said calm, good franchise.
Me personally, no, but that's just because of my lack of care of action films.
Okay, cool, fair enough. But yeah, it's solid franchise.
Okay. And the last 3 films that came up before this, where would you rank those in terms of 1 to 3? The three.
I think we agreed in this, right? I think we said this is me and Manny. I think we said that the third would be the first film, so that's Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
The third of the first series.
As in, if we're doing it third to first.
Fourth to first.
Well, no, because we're not doing. Are we ranking the thing that's
the last 3,
but not
no,
so yeah,
not Kingdom.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
So it'll be Rise that's third.
Yeah, got you. Yeah.
And it'll be War that's second, and then Dawn that's
Dawn.
First.
I'm with Dawn or War. I'm happy to go whichever way.
I think
Dawn like, is my favorite.
Same.
Only mainly.
Which one is the last of the trilogy?
War.
War.
Okay. Yeah.
War's the one with Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
I'm going with Dawn mainly because of Cobra.
Yeah, Cobra's dynamic is nuts. I mean, he sets the tone for the third one.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, and then also for the human connection, it's the last time we really see Caesar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, do the whole like human, I care about you type thing. Like, he does it obviously in the third one, but it's more out.
It's more prominent in the second one.
So much more prominent. So it's the last time in so far, even with this new one, Kingdom. It's the first time we see. We have a chance for like a human a relation, and they walk away in the last scene, literally being like, "I thought we had a chance." And like, "Yeah, nah, cool." And then just bop. So that was really, really cool to see that, because like the human was genuinely trying his best, but it's funny, the humans let the human down, and then the ape let the ape down.
So you're not an ape.
Yeah.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is a 2024 science fiction action film. It's a standalone sequel to The War of the Planet of the Apes. The film takes place 300 years after the events.
300?
After the events of War, and follows a young chimpanzee named Noah, who embarks on a journey alongside a human woman named May to determine the future for apes and humans alike. Jason, you seen the film?
No, I have not.
Okay. Any anticipation for the film, though? You eager to watch it? No. Take that as a no?
Not really.
Have you watched other?
Yeah, no, I've watched the other films, but it's like, because we were talking about the franchise in general, where it's like, you know, it's a solid franchise, but it's not a franchise that I've really, really cared about. So it's like, it's one of those films that I'm probably going to watch it once.
When it's out on
and streaming, like streaming services and that stuff.
Probably on Disney Plus, I assume. Yeah. The other films are. The other. So you two, over to you two. How did you feel about the film going into it? And obviously when you watched it after, when you left your screening, how did you feel about this film?
I had definitely mixed emotions in terms of them trying to continue the story, which I get it more now in terms of them lot leading up to what happens at the end of the 1968 film. So I get it to an extent, but sometimes I feel like the trilogy from the 2010s was really good. So I would have liked for this series to be of equal quality, which I don't think it was. I feel like the series in 2010s, you could watch those films as standalones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could.
And they were great films for what they were, but they also gave you anticipation for the next one if they needed one. I don't feel this film did that. I feel like this film made it so you would want to go and watch the rest of the films rather than making a great film that also
the Rise sort of falls into that category though.
I don't think so. I feel like I could just watch Rise and just watch Rise and be
but
be
Rise spent a lot of the film with building
foreshadowed. Yeah. I feel like as an individual film, it's still a good film. Like I feel it's still a good film. And my favorite parts of Rise aren't necessarily of what could happen in the future. Mm. I feel like with this film, there's a lot of something's going to happen in the future that we have to reference this film for. With Rise, I get it does that as well, but not to, like, the other stuff is good enough for me not to think about that too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't think this film is great in that area.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what I agree with you there. I think with this film as well, okay, like, they almost bring us into, like, a new world, you know what I mean? And with that, they have to bring us into a new world, but they also have to keep the lore or the foundation they've already set with three films, okay? Yeah. Obviously, we've now heard that this is one of a new trilogy.
Yeah.
Okay, so they still have to also build a story that's worth three stories.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
They set a foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's super tough.
Yeah. I think they do have a more difficult job because obviously the original series is based on the world that we're living in now.
Correct.
It's a lot easier for you to be immersed in that world because you live in that world. Mm-hmm. Where this one, they had to create essentially not from scratch, but kind of from scratch.
An evolved version of that world.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
There's like even stuff when you have like culturally you have to put more effort into what the apes are doing and why they're doing it and the history that they have. In the original trilogy, they didn't have that because they didn't have a history. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's definitely more difficult in doing so, but it feel like it could have been a bit better.
And it's funny, it became like a religious kind of timepiece, you
know? Yeah,
I
mean, yeah,
okay, which is a crazy like turn of events. But I feel like all the films, okay, like the main metaphor that runs throughout them is that humans and apes are like this. Yeah. Like they're side by side, okay, through everything, and that the way that the world is set out, okay, and the way that we've like evolved is that it's trying to show this like clear indication that when humans want something or they feel like they deserve something, when they do anything for it, they'll kill, they'll do what humans would call an animal would do. That's like senseless, right? And when the apes are trying to do the opposite, what they're realizing, okay, is that they can't live harmoniously or peacefully, blah blah, because political stuff is now happening between the apes and they're becoming more human, you know.
Yeah.
And it's this weird kind of
position, right?
And it's the same thing with Koba, you know. That was a political move that he was doing, you know what I mean? It wasn't because he was just a bad ape.
Yeah.
He had actual motives and intentions, you know.
Yeah.
And even Caesar, he was blind to it, you know, because he says as well, okay, like that his mistake was that he thought that ape is better than human.
Yeah.
But no, he was like ape and human, very similar, blah blah.
Yeah. I trusted Koba because he was an ape, but didn't realize that not all apes are the same.
Exactly.
Yeah. But an evolution within Caesar as well, and not just an evolution within the show.
Exactly. But he kind of represents like the humanity of the apes.
Yeah.
and so it was, I was always going to be worried about who's going to be that humanitarian representation for the apes.
Yeah.
This time around for Kingdom, I don't think we got a solid one. Noah, no. I think, wasn't the greatest.
He wasn't. He was Caesar Light.
He was, yeah, yeah. And I said this on a different podcast. Shout out to the Popcorn Pod podcast. But like, I just think he was very much kind of like, it wasn't believable that the journey that he took here. He went from being saying this ape that had no knowledge of the world, blah blah blah. Like, he never left his clan, and when he walks out, okay, like through the town, and he's on this like revenge journey, and then he meets this guy who tells him about the prophecy of Caesar. And blah blah blah. He meets him for like half a day or like a day, sorry, and then it's done. And then like he almost. And then after that, yeah, he blindly goes and backs Caesar everywhere. Caesar did not say this. Yeah. How do you know, bruv?
Yeah.
You didn't read the Bible.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, the switch up was too quick.
The switch up was so quick, man. It was so amateur, you know? And yeah, that was a horrible part. I mean, who was the antagonist? Prometheus?
Proxima Caesar.
Proxima Caesar, yeah.
The gorilla was a better antagonist than Proxima.
The gorilla was scary as hell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. But what I did like about Proxima though, okay, is that he had to, he was Caesar's representation. Because do you know how like Caesar was almost like the guy that learned everything and then showed it to everyone?
Yeah.
He was, Proximus was just a bad representation of that.
Yeah.
He was reading books, okay, he was getting the American dude to read him Roman history, okay, and that kind of stuff. So he was understanding like how the world works and how to conquer worlds and blah blah blah. It's bad information, obviously, but he was doing that and then trying to be like that. Yeah. So yeah, but it was an up and down film for me. Out of the four, now it's third.
Yeah, it's third. It's four for me.
Nah, I think it's better.
You think it's better than Rise?
I liked Rise. I watched it yesterday.
Good yeah, job. You think it's better than Rise? That's shocking.
No, Rise is better.
Yeah, I think this is easily full for me.
Might just be recency bias here.
Yeah, it might be recency bias.
I think the film did an interesting job of. We discussed it on the pod the other time, where the film used real relation and relatable themes and stories that we can relate to, and I really enjoyed the sort of dive into, again, the way. Religion or theme, religion, belief, scripture, or any of that can be twisted and manipulated in the favor of anybody that wants to. And I think that's what Proxima Caesar was able to do. And I think the film did a good job of that. So I really enjoyed that aspect of the film. I don't know how you guys felt about that. But
no, I agree. And also, it's not lost on me in terms of that the guy's protagonist's name is called Noah. I don't know if the...
Oh, biblical.
Yeah. I don't know if the end of the series is going to end with...
By the way, it's called Noah. And... Where Proximus was set up was a shipwreck.
Yeah, yeah, and there's quite a lot of themes with
water on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, no. It might end this trilogy with a flood.
I mean, the last, literally, bro. Yeah. The last scene is them ending it in a flood.
Any other aspects of this film you enjoyed or could want to critique before we move
CGI
on?
Was good.
CGI was fucking stunning.
Yeah, the action motion was quality as well, and obviously,
beautiful.
Yeah, really, really well done film. From a visual perspective, anyway, at least.
Yeah. And it was nice seeing like an ape clan that wasn't Caesar centric. You know, like it was nice seeing that. I wish we saw it in as a secondary factor. Mm. I wish we got like the Caesar continued story, not with him, but I'm just saying his like way of thinking, mm-hmm. and then we met different clans.
Yeah,
like, kind of like it in like Avatar, where you follow the same storyline and the main tribe, but then he goes out and sees different tribes, and then half of the film almost becomes about learning about these cultures and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas we got it the other way around, didn't it? Okay, this time where it was like we are forced to get to know this tribe immediately.
Yeah.
There's this eagle tribe or some eagle clan. And then he's reintroduced to the world, which is kind of annoying because for three episodes, either the humans are being introduced to the ape world or the ape world is being introduced to the human world. So we've seen it already bad times. You know what I'm saying? So it would have been nice for it to just be like, ah, let the apes kind of discover other apes that have gone through the same thing. We get it slightly in war with the ape from the zoo, you know, the small ape. And then I think Maurice goes, you know, is there more of him out there? That would have been cool to continue. You know what I'm saying? And see that. So, yeah, a little bit of a plot hole there. And May, because just be quick here.
Right, Alan.
May was a sick actor, yeah? And she'd done a really good role for what was written for her. I just think what was written for her was kind of dead, like, towards the end. Okay. You know, but she done a good job. It's just that...
Yeah, it's Freya Allen. She's a good actress.
Yeah, it's just that, like, she became... At the end, you're almost rooting for the... apes again, even though you're sitting in the cinema as a human and think, how would we want to do this if we were out there? Yeah, but
I think what's interesting about the film is that it poses philosophical questions, which is always great when you're going into a film. It kind of raises the idea of asking you what your politics and your philosophies are. And I really, it was interesting the way Proximus Caesar was using sort of aspects of tech from previous years, but needed to exploit his people to maximize that technology. Mm. And again, he was able to do that because he was able to manipulate and sort of use Caesar's sort of ideologies in his favor. And that goes to show the importance of text, keeping scriptures and maintaining that over previous years, which I guess they hadn't learned to do at that time.
Exactly.
But yeah, good film.
Yeah.
Good film.
Solid film.
Yeah. Out of 10?
6 for me. I think that's decent.
Yeah, 6-1 to 6-2.
Oh, you got points, 6 points, okay. 6.2, and you're on a 6 on a dot.
Yeah.
I'd give it like a 6-7. I liked it. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. More than I thought I would, because when I went in, I was kind of, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But by the time I left, yeah.
Also, when you watch the rest now, because I just finished War yesterday.
Okay.
And I clocked on War, they actually took a lot of War's laws. You know, the whole, like, humans not being able to speak, that was all from War. And then the whole, moving, across country and the base in the north and blah, blah, blah. All this stuff was in War. You know what I mean? Which is nuts, but yeah.
Another film that came out quite recently, 2 weeks ago, roughly, I would say, is The Fall Guy.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Jason?
That seems to be you.
You seen it?
Nah. Oh, Jason, what's going on?
I've been. Do you know what?
You should have seen that film.
That is one of the films I've been looking forward to, but I've just been bogged down with life and work.
Are you excited to watch it?
Yeah. I'm excited. I kind of spoiled it for myself in the sense of I've seen a couple of people already kind of like reviewing it.
Yeah.
Nothing to spoil, bro.
No. Not saying spoil it, but like some of my excitement has been damped by the
reviews. What's been said so far?
It's just okay.
Okay.
You know, and to be fair, it's not like that I expected like some amazing blockbuster film, but I'm thinking to myself like, you know, Emily Blunt, Ryan Gosling, I think that is supposed to be like a winning cast, even with
Aaron Taylor-Johnson
as well. Like, those are three actors that I quite enjoy, especially in the more recent years. So I would have thought to myself, like, this film would have been better than just okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But yeah.
I'll give a premise of The Fall Guy. It is a 2024 action comedy film directed by David Leitch and written by Drew Pearce. It is based on the 1980s TV series about stunt performers. It follows a stuntman played by Ryan Gosling, Colt Seavers. He's a seasoned action stuntman, and he's working on his ex-girlfriend's directorial debut action film, only to find himself involved in a conspiracy surrounding the film's lead actor, played by Aaron Taylor-Johnson. The film also features Hannah Waddingham, who is in Game of Thrones, and she was in Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Teresa Palmer, Stephanie Hu, and Winston Duke. Thoughts on the film, fellas?
Loved it.
I really enjoyed it. I think this is definitely Ryan Gosling's bag, his little niche.
You like this new Ryan Gosling, not new per se, but this sort of
this comedic, awkward kind of
just charming.
Gosling has always been funny though.
Yeah,
no,
he made
always
a conscious
has.
Decision to now make those films his specific bag.
Yeah.
Whereas before, there was a bit more diversity to the films he was doing.
You're yeah. doing Oscar bit films, fam. Let's be real.
Ah, no,
no. She's still
she Oscar. She's like,
there's Oscar bait.
Yeah,
let me talk.
But nah, like, but like the you're right. Obviously, with I guess like the recent ones being like Ken, you know, him playing Ken in Barbie. He was really funny in Ken, and the dance was lit. And then previous to that, what else do we have?
I'd have to get my Google
comedy
up.
Wise, well, but yeah, guys, but it, like, guys. But like you said, yeah, 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 yeah,
La La Land,
yeah, La La Land, mm-hmm.
Crazy Stupid Love, is it?
Like, bro, he's got some bags
yeah,
in
crazy
there, man.
Love, I think,
yeah. You know, you can speak up, right?
Oh, sorry, yeah, Crazy Stupid Love is Steve
Carell. Yeah, yeah, him and Steve Carell, yeah?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
he, also like you know, I just never thought he was that length. You know, like I just never thought he was what? No, nah, this is a serious thing because people generally think that he's the sexiest guy ever. Okay, do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, and then only this film did I watch him, and there were so many like close ups, and I was like,
they got you going.
That's when you
he's kind of paying still. Do you know what I mean? But when, it was the first
what,
time.
What did you do is after that, the cinema?
Huh?
What did you do after the cinema?
Went home and had a sandwich.
That's when you had your semi, innit?
Oh my god. No, actually, that was when Jason.
Okay, let's listen.
Momoa. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed the film.
He got you going.
Yeah, he got you going. Ryan Gosling does this. When he does a role or something that has to be charming and endearing, it comes across really well for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like his performances always feel honest. And especially when a film is based around, like, it's essentially a love letter to stuntmen and stuntwomen, where I feel like you have to be. You have to have a sort of love for the type of film that you make it to make this type of film for right, it to come across as good as it does. Right. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I appreciated the constant nods towards stuntmen and stuntwomen, even the little jokes that they made. Even like there's a scene towards the end with the stunt coordination team.
Right.
When they have them all rolling out the air thing. I can't remember what it's called, but it's obviously just a nod to people that work behind the scenes,
right.
And how quick like it is and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's sick, man.
You can see the work that they put into making stunts happen. So yeah, I enjoyed the film. I appreciate the importance of it as well.
There was a beautiful homage at the end, okay, where like they were doing like the B-roll. They were doing the behind the scenes of like the stunts. Obviously getting done,
nice.
They were showing the stunt people doing the stunts that Ryan Gosling and stuff were supposed to be doing. Because obviously it's funny because you're doing a film about a stunt guy being a stuntman.
Yeah.
And then because I was that man, right? So they were showing that. And then after they showed that, almost like bloopers, the first people that were on the list were, as in the credits, were like stunt people, the producers, like the runners,
so
everything.
Like flipped it almost.
They flipped it, and the cast was like maybe third, fourth page, you know?
That's
honestly, it was so, so sick, man. Do you know what I mean? Like in that regard. And I've been on set before, man, and only like I haven't been on set bare times, okay? But obviously doing, yeah, shut down, man. Spent like 9 months on set, you know what I mean? Like at least like 10 times.
Mm.
Their man work like donkeys, man. Like everybody, the producers, the runners, the art directors, everyone. Like they work like just like it's like a tight machine.
Constant mania.
It's a constant mania, and it's like 12-hour days. Do you know like a film day, a usual day is it's around 9 to 14 hours, like average. So, yeah, they're doing long days, okay. And then sometimes like they might have such a tight budget, right, that they can't shoot in 4 or 5 days. They have to shoot everything in one day. So you know what I mean? So like, yeah, like what they're doing here is outstanding. And I think it was a beautiful homage to that. But on the film itself, yeah, it was a really funny film. Like the support cast was, I thought the support cast was great as well. Winston Duke, by the way, I want to see him in more stuff. Yeah. ASAP.
Yeah.
ASAP. Yeah. I think he could be a sick, like, henchman. For someone, mm-hmm. You know what I mean. I think
you don't think he could be more than just a henchman, just because he's a black man and he's big.
Well, he's like 6 foot, wow. 6 foot seven, bro. Like run the thing. But obviously in this one, by the way, he was funny, right? He was very very funny. But obviously they used, bro, the way that he knocked out that guy with like one like armbar was crazy, bro. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, if he was like 5'9", that's not getting written in the script.
He's very charismatic.
Yeah. Like, I want to see more comedic leads, to be honest. I think he'll do a great job in doing.
I could see him in a rom-com smashing that out of the park.
Yeah.
And because of his appearance,
not literally
like
smashing anything out of the park, just the acting role.
Yeah, he's probably got a lot
of basketball reference. And because of his experience, like obviously big black guy.
Hey.
Whoa, God,
that is his appearance. we don't necessarily see.
He's a BBG. Okay.
Fair enough. We don't necessarily see that type of person.
Yeah, quite a lot of
leads in it. So I would like to see him in that.
Yeah, I thought the Fall Guy was good. I didn't love it, as I said on the other day. I thought it was there was so much going on, as we discussed. The sort of switch up in tone was a lot, but maybe my expectations caused me to not like the film as much as I should have.
Ask you a question,
uh-huh.
Right? So don't you think that there's this kind of like thing with like action rom-coms,
mm-hmm.
where you almost have to look at it like blindly a little bit?
Yeah, you should.
Okay,
yeah,
because obviously, like, there's this thing where it's like they're gonna make it so unrealistic. Like the whole producer sending him off to go find the guy—that's not a real thing. That will never really happen. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Okay, I mean him breaking into the an apartment and then seeing the body. All these things were kind of just off-tail, like it's so unnecessary. So did you go into that expecting that, or are you saying in spite of that, I still think it was a bit overdone?
If I overlook that, then I can say it's still not a bad. I don't think it's a great film.
Okay.
And that's where I always stand. I just think it's a good film. I think it's a Netflix release. That should have been a film that should have been a Netflix release.
No,
I disagree.
I disagree a lot.
I think it should have been a Netflix release.
A lot of people are like, this should have been streaming and from there, which.
I think it'll do well on streaming, but it's a good film to watch in cinema, I feel.
Yeah, man.
Not for me, man, unfortunately. I don't. Again, it's not to say I disliked it.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to dislike a film. So I thought Ryan Gosling was superb. Emily Blunt, she's
great, by the way.
She's great.
Yeah, she's charming, way funnier than I thought she'd be.
Doesn't take herself too seriously. You can tell in her acting performance. And you use the word honest, and I think that applies to Emily Blunt. The sort of supporting cast were good as well. Stunts were great. I just didn't love.
Fair enough.
The film. The stunts weren't great.
Stunts were okay. The fight scene in the club was wavy though,
and the car flip was cool.
Okay,
the seven rolls set breaking a record that we learned the other day.
Yeah, literally.
Shout out to Dylan.
But the fight scene was cool. But the stunts weren't like I thought they'd be like crazier stunts, but mm-hmm. it weren't like
cool.
Not bad.
Ah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Challenges. Oh no, we can't do that yet. We can't do that. I have to wait because you have to fuck off.
Yeah.
So we'll go over to what's up next.
Baby Reindeer.
You seen it?
Hell yeah.
Oh, you have.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like your type of bag.
No, you know it doesn't at all.
I've been lonely last week. And I thought, let me watch someone else that's also very lonely. You know. And
Baby.
What? Yeah.
Jason.
Decent segue. Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
A full cast have watched the same thing. It's quite rare.
Baby Reindeer, right? What's my
favorite? Bro, okay. That's her bag. That is her bag.
Baby Reindeer is a madness.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Jason?
Quick thoughts?
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Niggas be crazy.
Give us your...
Let me give a premise first. It is a British black comedy drama thriller miniseries created by and starring Richard Gadd, adapted from Richard Gadd's autobiographical one-man show of the same name. It's directed by Ronika. I can't pronounce her surname. I'm not going to try and butcher it. Essentially follows a man called Donnie who was stalked and also had other issues going on in his life following that situation. Yep. He was an aspiring comedian working in a pub. I think that can sort of leave the premise there and then discuss the series. Fucking good series.
Yeah.
Hard to call it a good series in a sense because...
It's hard to call it a good watch.
Yeah. It's a well-made series.
Yeah.
Hard to say it's an enjoyable watch because it's not... So,
it's not its aim to be enjoyable. No. I think what... Because the thing is, I'm not sure if it comes across as like, you know, a backhanded comment, but I don't mean it in that way. But what I enjoy the most about Baby Reindeer is the conversation that has followed after it.
Of course.
Persona's looking at you like you're a funny guy. Elaborate on that before we lose.
He means like it's opened up the floor to like deep conversations about like essay and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The way kind of like because there's a sense of morbid curiosity about people in general when they find a true story or based on a true story about something, like they go and find the actual people involved, apart from obviously Richard Gadd, he's starring in it.
Mm-hmm.
Finding who could be the possible
exec
as well, and like that morbid curiosity I found super super interesting in the conversation afterwards, even though the show in itself was like, you know, it's a gripping watch.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those shows, yeah, and especially episode 4. So I got to episode 4, right? And I was like, I can't watch this, but I was kind of still
watching
it. I was trying to like protect myself,
like
but I was still engaged. And
do you know how many of my like Roadman friends here like said, "Yo, I didn't watch episode 4."
Because I was like, "Why the fuck did you?"
And I was no in like the group chat. I think they were like, "What you?" I said, "Bro, if you didn't see episode 4, you would have had to watch it to not know not." So don't trash it. But I was about to say something crazy. I was about to say I enjoyed it. But what I meant to say is I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was absolutely like, bro, it was. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You're actually being groomed, but you're watching. You're like, you really like him at first, and then you're like, oh my goodness.
He was charming.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. He's agent. Yeah. He's agent. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's
probably my worst nightmare.
Yeah, but it just goes to how well the show was made, right? Like, you are really in the driving seat of kind of like his experience and his.
It's so raw.
Yeah, it's so raw. Like, I'm not sure which one of you two said it, but it's kind of like in terms of. Some of the best TV and movies that we've seen this year. I don't think I've watched a show from my recent memory anyway that is so visceral as,
it was mad.
As this. Yeah. And like,
it was mad. I actually said to a friend the other day, I said that, it was a good watch. Like, I enjoyed the series, but it would never be in my top 20, 30, 40, 50 series ever.
I think it's one of the best Netflix series I've watched.
Nah,
it's
not really.
One of the best Netflix series I've watched. I kind of get where you're coming
from.
Like,
it's cool. Like,
genre-wise, it's so out.
It's also something you're unlikely to revisit.
Exactly.
Which doesn't mean that it's not great, but generally speaking, for a lot of the time, you'd like to think that something that's great, you would revisit. Mm. But that's not always necessarily.
But sometimes it's the subject matter involved and stuff like that. And the subject matter is so heavy and like the experience doesn't leave you like...
in a good place.
Like, yeah, it doesn't leave you in a good place. So it's like, why would you, unless you're, you know... Yeah.
You know, I watched it all in one night.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Yeah,
no, I had to take my time.
I had to make a break.
Yeah, I think what I appreciated the most, and even from episode one, was that the amount of self-awareness that Richard Gadd had within
like
the show.
Mirror.
Because he, like, and I do appreciate the fact that he didn't intentionally go out his way to make, what was his name? I don't really know Fiona, Martha, necessarily look like a villain, per se.
There was accountability within the premise of what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Not to interrupt you, but I just think he took a lot of accountability where he kept...
He had to, in
the beginning, his relationship with her, he kept on sort of entertaining her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He thought at first maybe I was just being nice and charming, but then he started to realise that, I'm actually starting to...
Everybody sleeps with her.
He does sleep with her.
No, but he...
To get his libido working again.
No, that was a dream, bro. He didn't have sex with her, bro.
He just
fantasized about her.
I thought he was doing his thing. He was wanking over the photo, right?
Yeah.
And then I thought it was like he was like outside of a yard, and then he just...
He was imagining.
That was a dream.
Yeah, it wasn't a dream. He was fantasizing about...
It was
vivid. That's how he got off.
It was vivid as hell, bro.
Yeah. I think one of my notes that I made, I just appreciated the brutal honesty and depiction of those sort of life-altering experiences, whether it's the abuse that he suffered, whether it's the stalking, whether it's his relationship with... I forgot the character. Is it Terry?
Terry.
Terry. Like, there's a lot of sort of accountability, and I think he also showed that he is a bit of a piece of shit.
He definitely is. It's a very vulnerable show, especially it's based on your real life, and it's not easy for somebody to self-reflect to that level and just openly admit all the mistakes that he's made and how he's like and how people might perceive him. So I really do appreciate that. It's not a difficult story to tell.
Well,
and
make it word of our day. It's honest.
Yeah, so very, very
hands
honest.
Up.
Yeah.
Oh, no, of course not.
I think it should exist because it opens up conversations in a sense of like... I'm going to have to be careful with my words here. The conversation in a sense of like how the topic of abuse, sometimes it's not always a black and white thing in a sense of like there's a victim and there's an abuser. Sometimes the victim can play into the abuse, and it's a conversation that some people might need in a sense of like for...
It's a tough conversation to have as well.
It's a tough conversation to have, and like I think like, while some things might be super uncomfortable and whatnot, like, I am so certain that this show, in terms of like how honest and how self-reflective it was, might give people kind of like confidence to see what they might have
experienced. But what is the conversation that's being had? Like, is it actually a conversation that we need? As in, we all know what Martha did was wrong, but yeah, I feel like we almost forgot that there's a rapist on the loose.
I don't think people have forgotten
the fact that everyone's gone out of their way to find Martha, and now she has the interview and Piers Morgan.
That's just the social public, I guess, but that's the only conversation that exists though, because nothing else happens.
I've been seeing people talk about
out of the way to find the exec. Even I can't remember.
Yeah, it was the wrong guy. They said it was Sean Frawley.
Wrong guy. Yeah,
the wrong guy.
But
that's deep, by the way.
Yeah, no, he had to make a whole statement. But I don't think Richard Gadd did a good job at hiding anyone effectively.
Fair.
Or hiding Martha enough. He hid the exec, which kind of like proves the point that the conversation isn't being had and no one's actually doing the right thing here. One of them is more accessible and the other one, who actually hasn't paid for his crimes whatsoever, is roaming the street still.
But think about that as well, okay? Like he in the series as well, he confesses to playing into it. Like he literally says, okay, like, He almost makes him gay, or like he doesn't know what he does, and he carried on going back so we can explore his sexuality through abuse. And then after that, we went on this like tirade of like prostitutes and, you know, and different, like, you know,
sexual escapades. Yeah,
yeah.
He was crazy, and he was craving the abuse.
Right now, when you say all this stuff, it sounds sad, and oh my god, but does it hold up in court? No, all the court here is, you wanted it. Do you know what I mean? And it's horrible. It's so horrible. So, and then he done a play called Monkey See, Monkey Do, and that was about the sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about Martha. Then he done a play called Baby Reindeer, and it was a one man show, and that was about her, right? So then I think this was like an accumulation of the two, you know. So he has actually like open up about this years ago. He just wasn't Netflix. Do you know what I mean?
I think the issue is it's more of a reflection of probably of society, where the hunt was more so to find who Martha was than the perpetrator of sexual abuse.
I definitely hear it.
You're good.
Like, it's more in the sense of like, cool, I guess, especially like if you're on Twitter or TikTok and whatnot, like the act of finding Martha and whatnot, like it's they're chasing sensationalism.
Yes, it's silly.
And then like as Priscilla said, like Piers Morgan giving her an thing. But I do think that like outside of that realm as well, just kind of like how honest, and I guess I don't want to say maybe like within the show, like Richard Gadd definitely didn't do the greatest of jobs of protecting kind of like.
I don't think he was aiming for that. I think that's what I'm trying to say. No. I saw him say that. I saw him say that. Okay, I think he's capolining, because bro, in the second episode, right, when he was, or the third episode, when he finally Googled her and all that. Those are real articles, by the way. Those are real articles.
Protected one person because people still can't find the exact.
Yeah.
So I just want to know why he didn't have...
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying because she was charged and done, right? I think the fact that he never... Because he says it in the series as well, yeah? The fact that he went after 18 months and reported her and didn't report the exec in that same moment, or didn't do it 6 months ago or 7 months ago or blah, 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 okay, told him that, like, that he was taking his own kind of, like, accountability for what happened. That's not something for us to comment on. That's his... it's not how if I was him... And that's not how I'm dealing with it, right? But I can't judge how he's going to deal with it. So I think because of that, he can't put this person's name or face there, because he hasn't ever charged him. He's never gone and...
I think he can judge him because he's left so much. Like, he's kind of said that, I've been open and honest about this.
Yeah.
He's wrong in this sense.
Yeah.
I think he's the only victim where we've actually gone, you could have helped yourself out here.
Yeah, yeah, but this is what I mean. I was talking about...
That's the conversation.
Yeah.
So when I say he didn't protect Martha,
yeah,
the exec, yeah.
I think it does come across a bit cowardly in terms of, I feel like if the guy wasn't part of the same industry that he's in, he probably would have named him, or not even named him, it would have made it a bit obvious.
He's got a Netflix series, bro. He's done Xenophon.
That comes back to what I was saying, in the sense of like how abuse isn't always just as black and white, where it's just like sometimes the victim in itself, just like as you were saying, like doesn't help themselves, even though.
Those are hard things to say as well, right? To say like a victim hasn't helped themselves.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. It's difficult to say that.
And I'm not saying, like, I don't really, like, I don't want to be as harsh in that aspect, but like sometimes you do, like Baby Reindeer, I think, is a perfect example of it, where, you know, like, and not to judge, because as you were saying, like, we probably would have handled it differently, but like, when you're in that moment, in that thing, we don't know exactly what is actually going, but at the same time, it's like, come on, man, like, you could have not just done that. You could have done something so much easier to help yourself. But
it's very difficult.
It's very difficult. But that's kind of like some of the conversation that I've been seeing on top as well, where it's like that self-reflectiveness of like, look, while there can definitely be a perpetrator and an abuser who's carries most of the blame, it's not always kind of like a blameless situation on the victim.
Yeah, part. Yeah, yeah.
That is self-reflection. That is, I think, is a conversation that needs
to be. It's also tougher, okay, because he's a man, right? So it's tougher because, like, men are used to having kind of like the whole like sexual assault, mental health thing just by the past, just go like across the board, and no one gives a doo-doo, right? So I think that also plays into the social or the public aspect of it, that like it's more interesting to find the stalker, because you know,
that's that part where I said it's a reflection of like society where we wanted to headhunt sort of who Martha was,
exactly. More so, because if it was a woman, I promise you now, it'd be flipped. It'd be find the abuser, forget the stalker. Do you understand? Okay, because how many women, okay, do you know or do we'll say we all know that have a guy that is maybe DMing them every single day, that is maybe like at every single party, okay, obsessed with them, da, da, da. I know bare women like that. Happens all the time. It's awful. Happens all the time, right? But if it was a sexual assault thing, which, by the way, women go through, obviously, in theory, 10 times, 100 times more than a thing, we're going to look for that a lot harder. It's just that because he is a man, it plays into that for around 20%. Of the actual problem.
Just want to shout out Jessica Gunning as Martha Scott.
Yes. Oh, bro.
Her acting performance was unreal.
Give her an Emmy right now.
She really had this sort of eerie, obsessive... There was like a slight charm which she had to have for Donnie to sort of fall under her charm, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was like this eerie feel when she was... Especially when she lost her temper and lost control of her feelings.
Yeah.
Yes. It was eerie. It was terrifying, but also quite amazing to watch her acting performance.
Yeah.
I was amazed by the acting, but terrified by... I was actually terrified by my...
Yeah. Yeah. The scene under the bridge gave me goosebumps. The scene under the bridge gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Go for it. Go.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Well, Emmy, bro, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking, when the scene happened, I was like, move.
It's so easy to say, bro, who you are as a person.
People freeze, bro.
Until you're in that particular situation, I think that's so hard to say, man. And I get where you're coming from. In my mind, I'm thinking I would move, but I don't know how I'm going to react in that situation.
It was crazy. I don't think she should have taken the role.
What? Why?
It's one of them. It's one of the roles.
Okay,
it's
a defining role.
It's like a skunk stink. You know, it just sticks to you. Now every time anyone looks at her,
it depends on what she does. If she can go on, because I know she's had a good.
If she pays a stalker again, I'm joking.
And I don't think that's the case, because usually that's when the characters are fairly one dimensional. Like, for example, like Joffrey.
Yeah.
Like, his character was fairly one dimensional. He's an absolute crunch. That was a coward. But she had range in the show, and I don't think that's gonna stick with her, because by watching the show, you can tell she can play so many different characters.
Yeah.
Manny, what's next? Considering what we discussed, we've got two more things to discuss.
Challenges of 97.
Yeah. How are we doing this?
I'm jumping out.
Okay.
Basola is subbing in.
Yeah.
It would just be a you three thing.
No. You got a cut.
No. Have a cut.
Yeah, you can stay for this, though, because we're going to talk X-Men last, so you're fine.
Oh, okay, cool.
Why is this on top, guys?
No one's going to see it anyway.
Hiya.
Guys, challenges. This is the film that, firstly, 66 minute substitution. Hossam is off, and Basola's in.
Well done, Basola.
Hi, everyone.
No, look what you've done.
Guys, she turned something off.
Did I?
Turned the light off. Put that one back in. Yes, you did.
No, I didn't unplug anything. Oh, that's...
Guys, you're hearing a lot of commotion. We're just sorting out some substitutions. Don't worry about that.
I don't know, just because Kiz will do his job and remove this part.
Maybe for authenticity, we shouldn't.
Okay.
Keep it in, man.
This is your film. It's not really, but it is your film. It's the
film.
I'm trying to give you some flowers. See, this is why I can't give her flowers. Because when I do, she laps them up. Just be showing some humility.
All I did was humility.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All I did was smile. Fucking hell, I can't be excited to see you guys.
Nah, it's your film. It's your film. Talk to us.
We're excited to have you.
Why are we excited about seeing Zendaya with her two white boys?
Exactly.
Be politically correct when you say that, though.
I have been calling it Zendaya and her white boys, and that's because of the trailer. Because she's like, I keep my white boys in check. And since then, I've been like, oh, Zendaya and her white boys. Quickly, just a time of a detour. Do you guys see the fake poster?
Yeah. I used it for one of my reviews.
You did. Yeah. That was odd, man. Oh, that shit was
hilarious. The challenges official came out. He's like, that's not us. That's not us. That's not us.
Yeah, Amazon said, no, we're raining on that parade shirt.
That shit is hilarious. So I think I was excited for it because this is my whole, remember we were on live that time and I said that like, Zendaya is really a star. And I really think she's like,
yeah,
she's going to be like,
I agree.
Like, genuinely, I stand by it. I think there was one episode of Euphoria. I was like flipping out. I think it was True Story. You watch her addiction and then you like see her loss of her dad and stuff. And it's like, literally the story is just about her and like everyone's relationship around her.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, Zendaya like can really act. Watching her from Shake It Up to that, to other things. I'm like, oh, like you're eating.
Wouldn't expect that.
You're eating for real. Yeah. So I was like, when Challenges comes out, I'm actually excited for it. Like, I really want to see. And it had the guy that plays, I keep forgetting his name.
Prince O'Connor.
Maybe Prince Charles in...
That's Josh O'Connor, yeah.
In The Crown, yeah. And I liked him in The Crown. So I was like, yeah, I liked him in that season of The Crown.
When you consider these two projects, the range is quite impressive.
Yeah, so I was like, do you know what? I'm excited to see this. And I kind of am interested by tennis as a sport. I didn't know what I was going to expect. I feel like the trailer gave us nothing. It was really, really intense. It gave us nothing, but I was still really excited.
Yeah.
So then to go watch it, I was like...
A smile on your face.
I didn't know what I was going to expect, but I was just so like... I was just so proud. Like, there were so many moments in the cinema. I was just like... Mm-hmm. And you guys got me. Like, you guys got me. The acting was fantastic, yeah. It was so dramatic. It was a bit too horny at points, yeah, but we can live with that. I think the whole thing was just sex and tennis. Nothing else, really.
No, I think there's obsession,
stuff.
There's romance, there's the tie-in with like how it was interesting, like some of the relationships in the film almost felt like a tennis match in itself.
But I think the whole thing was that though, and
how love can be a competition, which is again the tie-in with the tennis, which I found quite interesting for me. Anyway.
Yeah. So and also I remember when that shot from like the bedroom threesome that everyone's calling it on Twitter, yeah?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they're not going to let these boys kiss. I know they're not. And then they kissed in the cinema. I was like, thank God. I'm really bored of threesomes when they kind of, it's just too like, yeah.
She manipulated those boys.
Yeah,
but they played into it as well. They loved it.
Yeah.
The wavy part about that scene, because I think they're both lip-syncing Zendaya on the side when they start lip-syncing.
Yeah.
When the camera shots with Zendaya looking up at them, that was a cold shot.
Yeah, she's looking back really proud of herself.
She looked so menacing.
Yeah.
That was a cold shot.
Like the scene of her being like a bit of a siren by the water, I was like, this is about to be the greatest movie ever.
That's when I my intro for a review I did said, Zendaya, you are a messy girl.
Yeah.
Quick premise. The film follows Tashi, played by Zendaya, or Zendaya if you're American. I can't say Zendaya.
It's Zendaya.
It is Zendaya. Yeah, apparently.
I thought it was Zendaya.
Yeah.
Zendaya Coleman.
Well, we're British, so we Daya. Do you know what I mean?
We don't say a surname. Come on, let's be serious.
Huh? Sorry. Yeah. I'm gonna start saying, when her and Tom Holland get married, he's just gonna be Tom.
Hey, my boy, shout out to Tom, man. Tashi is a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has helped to make her husband, Art Donaldson, played by Mike Feist, to become a tennis champion. To overcome his losing streak, he needs to face his ex-best friend and Tashi's ex-boyfriend, Mike, played by Josh O'Connor, which intertwines, it's very messy, intertwines personal histories with professional challenges. Manny, thoughts on the film? We have like 5 minutes.
Sure, I'll be quick. I really love that film. One, it's, I don't know if it's my favorite film of the year, but it might be.
It could be top five.
Yeah. It's definitely something that I need to think about. I think the writing was absolutely superb. I think the dialogue wasn't wasted. The way that the characters interacted with each other was so good. Like, I was sucked in every single conversation that they had. Come on.
From the beginning of the film, I was locked in.
Right at the beginning, I was locked in. The dialogue, it's one of my favorite written films in terms of like just characterization. And just how much you can tell about a person just by the conversation they're having and how they're having it. Like Mike Feist, his character Artie, you can tell that was, like throughout his teens and early 20s, it was very submissive and very much like he was very much in his shell. And it was only on the final scene of the film where we find out that what happens happens.
Oh,
when
the symbol, clocks, yeah.
I don't want to spoil for Jesus.
Yeah, the symbol. The symbol was cold. Yeah, that was hard.
Yeah,
my mouth. I went off.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Oh, I knew
it was coming. It had to happen because the foreshadowing from before.
But it was done perfectly.
Yeah. I thought they kind of dragged it on. I was like, no, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up.
No, when they actually executed it,
oh, yeah,
good,
when
but the process to get there was too long. But all the slow-mos that got, anyway.
Do you know, I didn't like the tennis ball shot, sorry. Take me out of that tennis ball.
Oh, bugging, I liked it.
I liked it still.
I wanted to vomit. Like, I actually felt travel sick, stop it.
That's another point, I'll make it after this. But yeah, after that scene, you can tell that he really comes out of his shells, and that's the first time throughout the film that I felt like his character was actually being himself. And the main reason why I feel like that is because at that moment, he finally was able to let go of how much guilt that he had. Because I feel like he felt guilt towards Patrick for doing what he did in terms of trying to get close to Tasha's character. The shot, I feel like this film was very experimental in the way that it was directed, and I really appreciated it. And I think there was like one shot that I really disliked was when Zendaya was in the car with Patrick before they're about to chop. Yeah. And I thought that scene was very Nollywoodish. I didn't like it whatsoever.
Because it was very Nollywoodish. The weather, bro, everything, then
my mummy water. But yeah, that's all the
that like. Is so dumb. You said mummy water.
Absolutely.
Oh my day.
Do you know what? I'm not mad at that. I think you got a point there.
Yeah.
But I did like the shots. I think it was fun.
Yeah, no, I think it was really fun.
Yeah,
careful.
There was a few too many slow-mos in that film that got a bit jarring, especially towards the end.
There was one slow-mo when she was walking away after having a conversation with my man outside when he's like, oh, can you coach me? Yeah. And like, she's walking away and it's so slow and she's got no bra on. So it's just like, it's just nipple galore. And I felt like it was too horny. That scene was too horny.
I didn't know it.
Was nothing wrong with horn, man.
No. But it was like, we've watched you guys chop, shag, everything.
We didn't see the
change, like, everything. We've just seen all of it.
Could have done it.
That was so unnecessary. Put it away, my goodness.
I don't feel that
it wasn't. It wasn't horny.
Was that horny?
No, it was a bit horny.
Because we didn't actually really see sex scenes like that.
Because what we did is allude to it constantly.
Yeah, it was
lips and all the time. There were scenes like, there was when they were talking about the performance, like, oh, you should play this way, but the conversations had whilst they're about to chop.
Yeah, but they didn't.
That kind of reminds me of, like, there's a scene in Game of Thrones where Thingy says something really, really crazy important thing. And like, there's two bass fingering each other. I'm like, really?
This, oh, that's different.
This had to be said at the same time? We can't
look it's probably a little finger scene. It's probably a little finger scene. Little finger's a crazy name, by the way. It's probably a little finger scene in this whorehouse, right?
Little finger.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, no, I knew I was doing. Yeah. But I like the film. I thought Zendaya was super charming, charismatic. Fantastic. All three were great. The sort of charisma between the three of them as well was really enjoyable. I don't really have any like huge thoughts other than...
I really enjoyed their press run as well, guys. It's actually like...
They got a lot of chemistry together, the three of them, yeah. And when I found out that the writer director is married to the woman that wrote Past Lives, like, yeah, that makes sense.
I think one of the things I also appreciated was, as I mentioned before, like how love and tennis were both used as competitions in the film. But also we all have different perceptions of love and competition and we all want to feel and win and feel love in different ways.
Yeah.
So like Josh O'Connor's appreciation of Zendaya was completely different to
Artie's.
I said Josh O'Connor. What's his character's name?
Robert.
Again?
Patrick.
Patrick's
Robert
appreciation Patrick, yeah. was completely different to Art's. And Zendaya's relationship with them two was completely different with each dynamic, which was really interesting. I enjoyed the film, man.
And even the dynamics that Artie and Patrick had together.
And it's quite an intimate film. It's like
very, very
it's
intimate.
Basically three characters that you focus on.
I like that. Small cast.
And it shows the irrational things that people do when they think they're in love or they are in love.
Yeah.
Which I think the film did well. Yeah. Good film. Any other thoughts?
No, I'm excited to see more Zendaya.
Yeah, same.
I wonder what she'll do next.
I do. Yeah,
have you guys seen the whole Women from Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Emma Stone, yeah.
It's so interesting, guys. I'm so excited to see where her journey goes now. I'm really locked in with that theory.
And Jason, this is your segment. You've been waiting for this, to be fair.
I'm waiting it.
Lean back.
Ooh. Stick around and ask questions.
Morning.
Yeah, always.
Nah, but I'll let you guys talk.
You go, bro. This is you've been quiet.
So last segment, X-Men.
97.
97.
Hey, what a series.
What a series. I think I was telling this maybe to you, or maybe I was just talking to myself, but it's some of the best TV I've watched in a minute.
Like, okay.
That's a big shout, my brother. Talk to me. I'm intrigued.
An absolute minute. So just to give a quick premise, so X-Men 97 is kind of like a follow-up series to the X-Men cartoon series that was aired in the 90s.
In the 90s, yeah.
And it kind of like, I almost want to say, follows a direct kind of like ending after
Charles Xavier dies, quotation mark.
Seemingly dies, but he actually goes to a whole nother
kind of like planet, which I'm forgetting the name of the...
Yeah, yeah, don't worry about it.
Irrelevant.
But essentially, and it's kind of like the team kind of like figuring out their lives mm-hmm. after Charles and stuff like that, and how Charles left his X-Men to Magnus or Magneto mm-hmm. and kind of like just then kind of like the series following from there. But what I enjoy about the series, and I've kind of like while I was watching the series, I kind of like learned a lot more about myself in the sense of what I tend to enjoy.
Interesting.
In the sense of like I only seem to really enjoy and really highly rate series for that kind of like make it like an allegorical experience of what black people tend to face, more or less.
Would you say black or just marginalized?
Marginalized, yeah. Community. Marginalized black because
you're
of
black,
us.
So you're relating
yeah,
to yourself.
I'm black,
yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
gonna
of
more
course,
relate
naturally.
To myself. But like marginalized people in general and kind of like that conversation and how, you know, storytellers and the writer Bo DeMeo.
That's a superb job. Unbelievable job.
Is,
unbelievable.
Black man.
Is he black?
The writer for this X-Men?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's black, and he left the show.
Mexican.
Okay, carry on.
I am not going to. Yeah, but
Afro-Latina.
We're gonna stick to that. You know, but him being gay as well. So it's like.
Oh,
him,
he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Him having clearly like pulling from his own
real life experiences. Yeah,
which,
yeah.
Why I assume like
with his love for. Superheroes and X-Men
love
combination, right?
Exactly. And like to have that kind of like experience watching it, like every episode, especially the latest episode, mm-hmm. had me kind of like gripping my seat. And I was just like, let's
it's the best Marvel Disney Plus series without a shadow of a doubt for me.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think, if anything, like Disney keeps proving themselves kind of like wrong, where it's like everything outside of their main series is better than what is in their kind of like main roster in terms of blockbuster release.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I don't know if they knew how much of a success this would be, but this series is superb, man. Like the character writing, it does such a good job in such a short space of time, considering each episode is like 30 minutes long, roughly. So it's cramming so many different character stories that are developed over the course of the series. And also like the relationship ties, like when you think about the X-Men are like a found family.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're so interesting to follow. It's like we're watching a soap opera. That's what I really enjoy.
Yes.
The relationships between, as I said before a few weeks ago, like you've got Rogue, Magneto, Gambit, you've got Wolverine, Jean, Cyclops, you've got the son Nathan, or Cable if you want to refer
Madeline
to him
as
Cable.
Well.
You've got Madeline, exactly. You've got
even the relationship between Storm and Jean.
Storm and Jean, their friendship. Yeah. You've got more from Wolverine's friendship.
Yes. Yep.
You've got Nightcrawler who comes in, his relationship with Rogue and his relationship with Wolverine. It's such a well-written series, man. Mm. And I was at first a bit unsure about how I felt about the animation, but the more I've watched it, the more I don't mind the animation. It's actually quite...
I thought the animation was
bad.
Quite
decent.
Good. Yeah.
It's not great.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think what stands out for me about the series, especially in the last episode, I don't know if you've seen it, is the sort of the array of color palettes in some of those action scenes. Unbelievable.
Yes,
so well done.
Absolutely amazing.
So yeah, I've really enjoyed it. Manny, any thoughts?
Nothing that you guys haven't said already. Great series, probably is my favorite Marvel.
Really? Why so though? You can expand on that.
It's just a lot more interesting. Like it's way more gripping. Like I'm more excited to see the next episode than I have in all other previous MCU films. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, it's only WandaVision and Loki
that you really like.
But it's definitely top three at least. Mm-hmm. Enjoyable, but there's nothing I can say that you guys haven't already.
I think it's also decided to give a huge focus on all the X-Men rather than in a live action. A lot of it was on Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, unbelievably one of the best live action.
And Wolverine
Wolverine, I mean, I can't necessarily blame like the films focusing on Wolverine. He's a fan favorite.
Oh, great character.
What I will say is what the show does so fucking well is the characterization of Cyclops. Like, I'll be real, I grew up a Cyclops hater. Like,
is it because of the live action?
Live action, and even
he's a bit of a Boy Scout.
Yeah,
it feels like
a Boy Scout, very, very Captain America esque, but like
not MCU Captain America. Show some respect, because that's my guy.
Not MCU. Kind of like cartoon wise and stuff like that.
Civil War, Winter Soldier.
You know, a bunch of kind of like TikTok creators have come out and said like, look, in the comics, Cyclops is actually like the exact same way he's been portrayed in 97. Mm-hmm. And I've not dived into the comics too much, but to see kind of like how Cyclops puts, kind of like similar to Magneto, like mutants first, like their well-being first, and but obviously like balancing that with the coexistence of you know, normal humans, I guess you want to call it that. But the way he's able to kind of, like, I always found him, especially within the movies, to be a flip-flopper.
Okay.
Right? And I was thinking to myself, like, how the hell did you bag Jean Grey?
Okay.
And
how did you bag the Felix?
Yeah, but after 97 or during 97, I was just like, ah, okay, cool. I hear it. Like,
yeah, Jean's a bad girl, you know.
Hey.
Hey. See what she did to my guy with Wolverine. She played on his heartstrings, man. She's a bad, bad woman.
Bad woman.
Magneto, any thoughts quickly, man, before we wrap up?
Oh, wavy character. He's been my favorite character so far.
Well written.
Yeah.
Because you know what they did? They reversed back from the typical Magneto portrayal where he showed some sort of understanding of where Charles was coming from.
Yeah.
But I think he also knew humans and he knew what was going to come. But he said, I'm going to give you the chance to prove me wrong.
I'm giving you the chance to disappoint me. That's essentially what he did.
Yeah. the way, as you said, like the way he's written, and he always knew. They, I think, in episode 7 or even 8, they kind of like make it was in 7 when the UN lady kind of like frees him, and she kind of like goes on this monologue about like, oh, how he always knew.
Yeah,
he always knew that we were gonna fuck over the mutants and stuff like that. Just a slight tangent as well. One thing I really really liked were the episode title names, and especially the last two.
Extinction is Tolerance, Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3.
Exactly. And then there's this quote that I'm not going to attribute to somebody because I actually don't know. But
Tolerance is extinction. Sorry, I got it wrong.
Yeah, tolerance is extinction. And then there's like this quote flowing about, like, I've seen it on Twitter, and it was just kind of like about how, you know, like, if you want to be tolerant, you have to be tolerant of intolerance. And I just kept thinking of that in the sense of like, oh, like, Magneto tried to be tolerant, but he had to kind of like tolerate the intolerance of the humans, like, you know, fucking them over in the end and stuff like that. And it just kept ringing in my head where I was just like, oh man, like, I was always sympathetic to kind of like his character and stuff like that, but it just made me even more sympathetic. And just the fact that you can get that from the title name, kind of like it, then the theme of it being kind of like explored throughout the entire episode, and as you said, like in a tight 30 minutes, is incredible.
Jason, good to hear from you, sir.
It's good. I've been waiting for that moment.
The post credit scene podcast, a 14 HQ original, lovers of film and TV. Basola's in the building. She'll be joining for the next episode as well.
Yes, sir.
Manny's here. You know the vibe.
Of course.
Jason's here from MK. He's now going back to MK. Have a great weekend, sir. Enjoy the sun.
Will do.
Are you going to be the Jardine? Of course you are, my boy. Trust me.
Didn't even give me a chance to say no.
If you're not, don't worry, still enjoy your weekend all the same.
We'll do. Thank
my boy.
You.
If you are a fan of the podcast or you like what we do, drop us a follow, drop us a like on all socials, Post Credit Scene Podcast on Twitter. We're on TikTok, we're on Instagram. We are on
Letterboxd now.
Do you want to talk to them about Letterboxd?
Not yet, because we haven't put anything out yet.
No. It will be out by the time this episode comes out.
It will be out by the time this episode comes out. Follow us on Letterboxd. It's PCS Pod. And look out for more reviews.
Drop comments on Spotify as well, because you can do that.
Can you?
Yeah.
Pretty new feature, right?
Yeah.
We can even ask questions on Spotify for them to answer. Mm. We can do polls.
Let's go. It's the vibes.
Okay. Well,
run out.
I've run out.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene.